Parshas Kisavo. It's hard to say that it's an exciting parsha because every parsha is very exciting. In fact, the Gemara says, I think it's in Maseches Erevin or Maseches Shabbos, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to say about one part of Torah over the other that this is my favorite part, because that's basically implying that everything else is not so exciting and this is something that excites me more. As that is the case, Parshas Kisavo is a very beautiful parsha at the very end of Sefer Devarim. And it's Moshe Rabbeinu, right before the Jewish people go into Eretz Yisrael. As we know, Moshe Rabbeinu was denied access and entry into the land of Eretz Yisrael. He hands over the mantle of leadership to Yehoshua ben Nun. And the first job that Yehoshua ben Nun is given is to lead the Jewish people into the land of Eretz Yisrael, to split it up by Shevet, to get everybody settled where they belong, and to be able to populate the land of Eretz Yisrael and get all the wonderful things that it was supposed to give them. So we open up the Parsha Bahaya Ki Savo El Haaretz, and it will be when you come to the land Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Lecha Nachala, that God will give you as a Nachala, which means as an inheritance, V'yirishta V'yashavta Ba, and you will conquer it, and then you will live in the land. The Gemara Maseches Kiddushin writes, how long did it take for the Jewish people, once they crossed over the Yarden, once they crossed over the Jordan River and came into the land of Israel, how long was it until everybody was settled in their proper location, living by the proper section where they were supposed to be, and being able to live life the way that they were supposed to live? How long was that? Says the Gemara, it was Sheva Shekipshu v'Sheva Shechilku. It was 7 years of war, where they had to fight against all the nations of the land who were there previously. And then it was a subsequent 7 years that was needed to be able to settle and conquer and be able to be where everybody was supposed to properly be situated. So this was a long process. Obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu was not a part of any of it, but he is trying to get them ready. Now, the Arachayim HaKadosh writes at the very beginning of this week's Parsha, why is it that the Torah says that it will give us Eretz Yisrael as a nachala, as an inheritance, v'yirishta, and you will then get it as a Yerusha? So he says, V'nirash HaKavanos HaKasav Hi SheYitzav Hashem Dalet Mitzvos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a number of mitzvos here. Number one, says the Arachayim, that you have to realize, SheYeda B'libo, a person has to realize and has to internalize, Ki Lo B'Kocho V'Lo B'Otzem Gvuraso Ba'La Reshes HaSa'aretz. Do not think that because we have a strong army, do not think that because we have an IDF, and we have so much military prowess, and we have such a great intelligence, do not think that that is the reason why we have Eretz Yisrael. Rather, the Torah says, it is a matnas Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the very beginning of our parasha, says, when you will come to the land, asher nasan lecha nachala, that I have given you, which means, God gave it to us. It's not because you're so strong, and it's not because you're so smart, and it's not because you're so successful, but rather, says the Arachayim, it's to realize and to remind ourselves all the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us. It's Nasan Lecha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving it to us as a gift. V'hu Amru, Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Lach. And that's what the Torah means when it says that God has given it to you in His mercy. But, says the Arachayim, that what the Torah intends to teach us here is that there is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. There is a mitzvah of moving to Eretz Yisrael. There's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, to populate the land of Eretz Yisrael. And that's what the opening words of our parsha mean, V'haya Kisavo El Ha'aretz. There is something uniquely special about Eretz Yisrael that we find as a tremendous emphasis. I think it should not go unnoticed by any of us that the greats of our people, all the greats of our people, their very first communication, their very first direct conversation with the Ribono Shel Olam, with God Himself, was about the land of Eretz Yisrael. How so? You start with the very first Jew. Now, obviously, we call him the first Jew, and that was Avraham Avinu. There's actually a very amazing sefer that is called the Sefer Parashas Derachim, which is a beautiful sefer where he argues whether or not the Avos were actually Jewish. What made them Jewish? Before God gave us the Torah, what made somebody a Jew? So how do you define Avraham Avinu? Either way, Avraham Avinu is the father of our people. And what was the first communication that Avraham Avinu has with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The first time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates with him is when he instructs him, Lech Lecha, Me'artzecha, Mimoladetecha, Ela Aretz Asher Areka. The first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu is, I want you to go to Eretz Yisrael. That's the first conversation. And if you think that that is coincidental, you then move a little bit later on in history to his son Yitzchak Avinu, who is the second of the Avos. And Yitzchak Avinu is living a beautiful life, and then at some point, Vayihi Ra'av Ba'aretz, there was a famine in the land, and Yitzchak doesn't know exactly what to do. How are we supposed to deal with it? He goes back into the family chronicles to check up, what did my father do when there was a famine? How did Avraham Avinu deal with it? And he looks back and he sees that Avraham Avinu left the land of Eretz Yisrael in order to find food somewhere else. And Yitzchak Avinu does the same thing. He leaves the land of Israel to go try and find food somewhere else. And immediately at that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Yitzchak for the first time in his life and he says, Al Teirid Mitzrayim. You're not allowed to leave the land of Eretz Yisrael. Shchon Ba'aretz Hazu, you have to stay here in Eretz Yisrael. Again, first communication that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with Yitzchak Avinu is the same as the communication that he had with his father. Yaakov Avinu, when was the first time that he encountered God? First time he had a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Vayifka b'makom vayalan sham. Avraham Avinu is running away. He's a fugitive. He's afraid for his life. And he falls asleep. And we're all familiar, Rashi tells us in the name of the Medrash that there are Malachi Elokim, Olam Yardim, and the Medrash gives us the whole picture and everything that was going on. And there, the Torah says, V'hinei Hashem nitzav alav. On top of that ladder, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Yaakov Avinu, and he says, Ha'aretz asher ata shochev alea lecha tenena ulizarecha. I want you to know that this ground that you're lying on is sacred and holy ground. And I want you to know that you're going to end up coming back here. And I promise, V'hashivo sicha el ha'adama azos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates with Yaakov Avinu, just as he did with Yitzchak and with Abram, all about the connection that they have to the land of Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu, when was the first time that the Torah records a conversation between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Ribono Shel Olam? By the Sneh. And what exactly did he tell him? He said, Ra'o ra'isi es ani amo Yisrael, I want you to know that I see the suffering of the Jewish people, I understand how much they are struggling, and I appreciate their struggles. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want you to know, Ve'ere da hatzilo mi'ad Mitzrayim, lahalosa min ha'aretz ahi, el ha'aretz zavas fala v'dvash, el makam haknani. I want you to go down to the Jewish people and tell them that although that they are suffering and they are being afflicted and they have so much oppression, I want them all to know that I am going to take them out of Mitzrayim, and ultimately I'm going to bring them into the land of Eretz Yisrael. Yehoshua ben Nun, what was the first time HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicated with him? The Ribbono Shel Olam says, Yehoshua, I want you to know Moshe Abdi Meis. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Eved Hashem, has passed away. Now your job is, Kum Avoras Hayarden Hazeh. El ha'aretz asher anochi nosein lahem levnei Yisrael. Your job, it's the first parak in Sefer Yehoshua. Your job, Yehoshua, is to encourage the Jewish people to go on this journey. And it's going to be difficult, but you're the one who has to lead them into the land of Eretz Yisrael. Do you believe that all of that is coincidental? Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Yehoshua, ben Nun. All of them. The first time that the Torah records a conversation that they had directly with HaKadosh Baruch Hu has always been about Eretz Yisrael. It's because Eretz Yisrael is extremely foundational to everything we believe in. Kisavor la'aretz is something that we all need to think about. There's a fascinating Gemara, Maseches Pesachim, where the Gemara tells us, as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu is referred to as the Adon HaNeviim. He is the master of all prophets. Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest of all the Neviim. We say it in our beliefs. Lo kam b'Yisrael kemoshe od. There never was and there never will be another Jew who will live who is as connected, who is as exalted, who is as understanding of God as Moshe Rabbeinu was. And yet with all of that, somebody who gets to the apex, to the pinnacle of spiritual experience, listen to the way the Gemara describes the following scenario. Writes the Gemara in the end of Maseches Pesachim, the very, very end. Asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu lasos su'uda latzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God is going to make a su'uda, a festive gala celebration for all the righteous people who are in the world. Now, who are they? I assume there are going to be lots of people invited. Probably Hillel and Shammai and Abai and Rava and the Rashba and the Ramban and the Rambam and the Ravid and the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah and Rabbi Kiveger and the Samsef and the Abni Nezer and the Ksos HaChosha and the Nesivos and lots of great Jews are going to be there. A lot of great people are going to be at the Suda Latzadik. Says the Gemara, they have a great time. Everybody is feasting away. And now it comes to the end of the meal. and it's time for Birchas HaMazon. Okay. The problem is, they can't figure out who should lead the Birchas HaMazon. Who should be the one to bench on behalf of everybody who's there? So this one turns to the other one, and everyone's looking at each other, and nobody knows what to do, and finally someone stands up and says, hey, Moshe Rabbeinu's here. What are we arguing about? Why don't we have Moshe Rabbeinu be the one to bench, to say Birchas HaMazon on behalf of all of us? Sounds fairly simple. It's what I would have done. All eyes on Moshe Rabbeinu. And says the Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to everybody who is assembled and he says, Ani lo avarech. I cannot be the one to be given this honor of Birchas HaMazon on behalf of all those who are here. Why? Although I am the Adon HaNeviim, although I am the only one who was peh el peh, who spoke directly with the Ribono Shel Olam, although I am lo kam b'Yisrael kamoshe od, although all of that is true, there is something very deficient and very lacking about my life. Lo zachisi likanes la'eretz Yisrael, lo b'chayi v'lo b'mosi. I never had the opportunity to go into Eretz Yisrael, not while I was alive, and not even after I died. You can be Moshe Rabbeinu. You can accomplish so much in your life. But he felt there was something very lacking in his personality, because he never went into the land of Eretz Yisrael, which means that our connection with Eretz Yisrael is not just another one of the 613 mitzvahs. It means that it is so central, it is so fundamental, it is so significant, it is so dominant in what defines us as Jews, and it makes us more complete. How lucky we are that we have the opportunity in our generation to take advantage of that gift and to understand what it means to be people who have the opportunity to be a part of the experience in Eretz Yisrael. The Sefer Charedim, which was written in the 1500s, it was at the same time as Rabbi Yosef Karo, Rabbi Shlomo Alkevitz, Rabbi Chaim Vital, all of the great Mekubalim and Tzad. So the Sefer Charedim writes, if you look here at number Aleph, Sarech kol ish mi Yisrael lechaved es Eretz Yisrael. Every Jew has to show a certain sense of admiration for the land of Eretz Yisrael. V'lavo eleha me'afse Eretz b'tshuka gedola. And to come to Eretz Yisrael with a tremendous longing, with a yearning, with a fascination. Kiven el chekimo. Imagine if you have a child in a department store who gets separated from his mother. And the child is hysterical. And finally, somebody makes an announcement. Would this person please come to the register? We have your child. And they see each other from across the hall, from across the lobby. And one starts running toward the other. Kiven el chekimo. Says the Sefer Charedim, that is the kind of feeling that we should have toward our reunification with Eretz Yisrael. We've been away for a very long time. But now that we have the opportunity to be reunited once again, it should feel almost as if we would feel if our own child, God forbid, was missing, and then we were reunited. What would that feel like? Hitchila savono shenikva lana b'chiyah ledoros. How did our whole problem begin? Our problem began when the Jewish people did not really accept, when the Jewish people rejected their connection with the land of Eretz Yisrael by the Chet HaMaraglim. That's where it all started. And therefore, he writes, the only way to have a pidyon hanefesh is if we come to an understanding of how significant Eretz Yisrael is in all of our lives. Now, you'll ask yourself, why is it so important to have a relationship with Eretz Yisrael? There are many mitzvahs in the Torah. So why is Eretz Yisrael so significant? Is it some kind of mystical, magical experience? You go there and all of a sudden everything's going to be perfect? Of course not. You go to Eretz Yisrael now and you see things are not perfect. I just came back from Eretz Yisrael. I have to say, Tova ha'aretz ma'od ma'od. Everything's wonderful, everything's great, but at the end of the day, there are some people in Eretz Yisrael who are still not so perfect, just as there are many people in America who are also not so perfect. And there's a lot of fighting in Eretz Yisrael, and people are angry about certain things, and maybe there are prime ministers or presidents or chief rabbis who ended up in jail because they're a little bit corrupt or a lot corrupt. These things happen. We're not living in a perfect society just yet, which is why we daven every day, Hashiva Shofteinu Kevarishona. We should come to a time when there's going to be a justice system that's going to be honest, where everybody's going to be doing exactly what they should do. Okay, until then, we look at the positive, we try to deal with whatever we have. So why is it so important to have a connection with Eretz Yisrael. What is this all about? Why do we need it? Our lives are just going to be perfect. Some people think you make Aliyah. This is not a plug for Aliyah. Some people think you make Aliyah, I'm going to have perfect children. I'm going to have a perfect family. Everything's going to be amazing. I'm sorry to tell you, it doesn't always work out. For some people, it's great. For some people, it's horrible. Rabbi Usher Weiss has told me many times that he sent many families on Yeridah. They moved to Eretz Yisrael. It's horrible for their kids. The chinuch of your children is more important than living in Eretz Yisrael. Now, for some people, living in Eretz Yisrael is going to enhance the chinuch of the children. For some people, living in Eretz Yisrael might be a very negative consequence on their children, and therefore, chinuch of your children has to take precedence. So why do we want to live in Eretz Yisrael? Why do we want to have a connection to Eretz Yisrael? What's it all about? And the Gemara basically addresses this question in Maseches Sota. The Gemara wonders, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Va'eschanan is pleading for his life, and all he wants is to have access into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And you ask yourself, why does Moshe Rabbeinu care so much? God said no. So accept the answer and move on with life. Why is he incessantly begging to go into the land of Eretz Yisrael? Ask the Gemara. Mipnei manis ave Moshe Rabbeinu likanes la'Eretz Yisrael. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu want so badly to go into the land of Eretz Yisrael? B'chilech al mipiria hutzarech. Did Moshe Rabbeinu need to fill his cravings and his appetite and visit all the restaurants on Rehov Yafo? And he had to go to the Mamila Mall, and he had to go to all the beautiful spas that they have in Tel Aviv, and he had to go to the ocean. Is that really what Moshe Rabbeinu needed to go to Eretz Yisrael for? I'm sure there are plenty of beautiful places in the world to go. And you can find nice foods in Hawaii, and I'm sure you can go on a great vacation to some other location. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to go to Eretz Yisrael so badly? Says the Gemara. Chidus ba mituva utzarech. You think Moshe Rabbeinu needs to find a great natural springs, and he has to find, you know, the Dead Sea to go do some skin treatments? Is that really what this is about? Of course not. So why does he want to go? Says the Gemara, Kafa Mar Moshe. Harbe mitzvos nitztabi Yisrael ve'eim iskaimen ela be'eretz Yisrael. We have 613 mitzvahs. And there are a whole grouping of them that are not relevant outside of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu said, it's not fair. I want to be a complete human being. I want to be a complete Jew. Shleimus. And the only way to get there is by observing all the 613 mitzvahs, but that is impossible if you don't let me go into the land. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, allow me to go into the land of Eretz Yisrael in order that I should have the opportunity to observe the mitzvahs that are only relevant in the land of Eretz Yisrael. It gives a very different kind of perspective, which is why the Yerushalmi writes, in the second bracha of Birchas HaMazon, we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we thank him for the gift of Eretz Yisrael. And in the context of that bracha, we say, "V'al toraschal shelimadetanu." What does that have any connection to our gift of Eretz Yisrael? The answer, says the Talmud Yerushalmi, is the fact that we go to Eretz Yisrael. If we didn't have a Torah, Eretz Yisrael would be meaningless. Go to Uganda. Go somewhere else. Make the Jewish state another place. Why would you want to be in Eretz Yisrael? Because being in Eretz Yisrael gives me the opportunity to observe mitzvos in the Torah. And we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Eretz Yisrael, and we say, in the context of that, we understand that a major piece of that experience is Al Torascha Shelimadetanu, that in your Torah you have taught us exactly how we're supposed to behave in Eretz Yisrael, what we're supposed to do, and therefore we have the tremendous appreciation for the land of Eretz Yisrael, which affords us the opportunity to observe certain mitzvahs that we cannot do anywhere else. Yeah?
My question is, don't we have a lot of mitzvahs that no single person
That's true. That's true. So I don't feel bad that I'm not a Kohen and I won't be able to do Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. It's not my job. It's not what I'm supposed to do. Does that mean that if, let's say, somebody, I'll give you just an example, right? Let's say somebody ends up in the hospital on Shabbos, and as a result of that, they're unable to observe Shabbos the way they otherwise would want to because they have to take care of their medical needs. Now, would it be better if they wouldn't have to do that? Of course, Shabbos would be much better if you didn't have to do that. Under the circumstances, would we advise them to do anything differently? No, we would say, this is what you should do, this is what the Torah wants you to do. But would it be better if the circumstances were different? Yes. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, look, if this is what you want, this is what it's going to be. But I don't want to be cheated. I don't want to be cheated of the opportunity. So allow me the opportunity to do something that I otherwise should be able to do. I can't make myself a Kohen. I can't go serve in the Beis HaMikdash. I can't do certain things. But this I should be able to do. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was very, very uncomfortable. So the question then becomes, those of us who are here right now, obviously, are living in Chutz La'aretz. Obviously are here. So what does Eretz Yisrael mean to us? What does it mean to us when we talk about how much our connection to Eretz Yisrael needs to be strong? Of course, we visit and we frequent and we learn there and we support and we advocate and all the other wonderful things, but is there anything more than just that? This is why Rav Kook very famously tried to speak a lot to the B'nai Torah in his generation that although it's important to learn many different areas of Torah, something that he really tried to encourage was the study of Seder Kutchin. He wanted people to start learning about how the Karbanos are going to be brought, how the Beis HaMikdash is going to run. I mentioned that I was just in Eretz Yisrael, and one of the activities that we did, which was so eye-opening to me, and I encourage anybody here who finds himself in Eretz Yisrael to do it, it was fascinating, really fascinating, amazing. It was in Karnei Shomro. It's called Breads of the Beis HaMikdash. Anyone ever did that? I was so amazed by it. This man owned a bakery, and then at some point in his life, he spent over 7 years studying and researching and learning everything about every single bread that was possibly offered in the Beis HaMikdash. So we're all familiar with the Lechem HaPanim, and with a little this, a little that, but when you read through the Psukim and the Mishnayos and the Gemara, you find that there are many, many different details and variations about all the different breads that were brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And some of them had oil, and some of them were deep fried, and some of them were just regular fried, and some of them were baked in the oven before the frying, after the frying, everything. This man worked it all out. Spent 7 years of his life and wrote a sefer about all the breads of the Beis HaMikdash. Amazing. I told him, I think it's pretty official that you are the world expert on breads of the Beis HaMikdash. I think there's very little competition. Actually, a number of years ago, I bumped into someone who wrote a sefer on someone here. He was, I think he's a professor in Revel. So he teaches Tanakh and Revel. I forgot what his name is. So he's Rabbi Schwartz's brother-in-law. Anybody knows? I forgot his name. So I forgot his name. Anyway, I think he wrote a sefer on one of the treyasar that like nobody ever learns, ever. And I asked him, like, I'm just curious. Usually when people write a book, they want people to read it. So you wrote a book about something that you know nobody's going to read. So why would you choose to spend years of your life doing that? And I remember his response to me was something that really inspired me. He said, look, I know that I'm not going to be the world's greatest Talmid Chacham. It's just not my tafkid in life. Other people are the Talmid Chachamim. Other people are doing this. Other people are doing that. But I wanted to make a contribution in Torah that nobody else in the world was going to make. And I wanted it to be clear that if anybody ever had a question on this Sefer of the Treyasar, there's no other address in the world to go to other than me. Because nobody knows it as well as I do. I was so amazed by that perspective. I was so amazed by it. It was so inspiring to me. And he wrote a sefer on something, even though he knew nobody was going to buy it. But should you ever have a question on that area of Tanakh, there's one address you go to. If I knew his name, I would be helpful to you. But Mitzvah Shem, we should all learn Tanakh like that. But this was something that really amazed me. This man studied everything there is to know about every bread that is offered in the Beis HaMikdash. And I felt, after learning Mishnayos and Gemara for many, many years of my life, so many different realities came to life. So much of it became alive, where you can now understand, you know, we talk about a carbon toda, we say Mizmar Lasoda every day in our davening. We talk about a carbon that was offered when I had to give thanksgiving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something positive that happened in my life. I never really understood what that was till you go to this man's house and you see how much has to be brought with the Karban Toda. And you begin to have an appreciation. You can't just show up to the Beis HaMikdash one day and say, hey, I'm here to bring a Karban Toda. It's like, it requires preparation in advance. It requires like making up at the bakery in advance and knowing what you have, what you don't have, what you need. It's fascinating. It really fascinated me. But it brought me to an understanding of what life is somewhat, a glimpse of what it's going to be like when we have a Beis HaMikdash. And said Rav Kook, we have to start focusing on some of this because we need to start getting ready for that reality, for that possibility of what's going to happen when we have a Beis HaMikdash. How many of us know the laws of Tumah v'Tahara? How many of us know the laws of Kodshim? How many of us know the laws of anything? This is something that's going to be a reality to us. We're going to have to deal with it. So he was a big proponent of that. The Chafetz Chaim, as we know, also was living at the same time, also was a very big proponent of this whole movement to learn Kodshim and to try to understand the mitzvahs of Tluyas Ba'aretz. And the way the Chafetz Chaim explained it was as follows. The Chafetz Chaim said, Kedimyon hanisuin. Like when a couple gets married, imagine a chassan or a kala shows up to the wedding. A kala shows up and she's getting her makeup done and her hair and her gown and her everything. And she's been working for weeks and months on all of this. And she shows up and she's so excited. And you know, like the chassan just doesn't come. Just like forgets all about it. Like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was like out to dinner with my friends. I forgot all about this. Like, how's that going to make his kala feel? If she'll ever forgive him for that? If she'll ever decide to marry him? You feel so rejected. You don't respect me, you don't care, you're not excited. Said the Chafetz Chaim, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day that he should bring us to have a geula, he should bring us back to Eretz Yisrael, v'kabtzenu yachad me'arba kampus ha'oretz, has tzemach David avdecha, v'li Yerushalayim yircha, v'sechazene einenu, all of these beautiful lines in the davening, and yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'm ready. And we are like that spouse that like, totally forgot, I'm sorry, I'm at the dinner with my friends, I totally forgot that we were supposed to do this. You have to be prepared. And the only way to be prepared is to learn the things that are relevant for us to know about Eretz Yisrael. So with all of this in mind, let's spend just a few minutes trying to familiarize ourselves with some of the mitzvahs hatluyas ba'aretz. I just want to define terms. I'm not going to go through the halachas of each one. Just that we should even be aware for once in our lives of what the terms actually are. And then I'm going to get into a very important discussion that's relevant to our generation and our community living here in Chutz La'aretz and our relationship with the Mitzvos HaTluyos Ba'aretz as they stand now. So the Gemara tells us, there is a category of mitzvos that are referred to as the Mitzvos HaTluyos Ba'aretz, which means these are a category of mitzvos that can only be fulfilled in Eretz Yisrael. And even if I were to volunteer to do them in America or anywhere in Chutz La'aretz, it would have no meaning or relevance at all. So say, for example, we have a mitzvah of Shemitah. Every seventh year, you're not allowed to do work on the field. So I had somebody who came to me this Shemitah and said, I think that I want to really identify with what's going on in Eretz Yisrael, and I am not going to plow my backyard. Not that he has things growing there, but he's not going to cut the grass in his backyard for an entire year. Is there any significance to that? It's very nice. It's a nice sentiment. It's a nice feeling. But is there any halachic significance? The answer is no. Because that's one of the mitzvahs hatluyas ba'aretz, which means it is relevant if you live in Eretz Yisrael. If you live in Chutz La'aretz, if you live outside of Eretz Yisrael, we don't have to let our field be barren for the seventh year. This is something that is limited to that. So let's see, what are the mitzvahs hatluyas ba'aretz? First of all, we have the mitzvah of leket. Leket, shikha, and peah are three mitzvahs that are very similar to each other, but with slight differences. Leket, shikha, and peah mean when you have a farmer who is harvesting and collecting all the grain that has grown through the season. Leket means as he's harvesting, if he leaves behind two sheaves that fall down on the floor, he has to leave them behind in order that the poor people should be able to come and gather that which was left behind. Shikha means if while I'm taking all the bundles that I've accumulated, I leave behind a bundle or two and I forget to take them, I'm not allowed to go back and take them. I have to leave them there in the field in order that a poor person should know that they are welcome to come and live off of that which I have forgotten. And peah means I have to take a selection, a quarter of the field, and I have to leave it over for the poor person who doesn't have enough to sustain themselves and their families to come and be able to take. Then the Torah tells us that we have a mitzvah of peret, of ololos, and those two are basically when I have grapes, and as I'm harvesting the grapes, I mistakenly leave some of them on the tree or I leave some of them behind. It's the same halach as leket, shikha, and peah. The Gemara then tells us, I'm sorry, the Gemara has a lot of discussion about all of this, but the Torah tells us about Shemitah. Shemitah means at the end of a six-year cycle, you then come into the seventh year. And in the seventh year, you are not allowed to do any work on the field. You have to allow everything to grow wild, and it is all considered to be hefker. Hefker means that it is ownerless. Ownerless means everybody has a right. It's not mine. It's all of ours together, which means anyone who wants can come and take whatever they like from the field, and they don't have to pay for it, they don't have to ask permission, the fields don't belong to me, and they would be allowed to take. The Gemara describes the story of Maaser Ani. Maaser Ani means that I have to take 10% of my annual givings on the third and the sixth year of the cycle, and I have to give it to an ani. I have to give it to a poor person. We have the mitzvah bikurim, which means the very first fruits of a certain crop of a certain cycle. I have to bring to Yerushalayim, eat them in Yerushalayim, give it to the Beis HaMikdash. Neter Avayah, Hafresh Haschala, Truma, Meiser, all of these different things are from the mitzvahs HaTeluyas Ba'aretz, and unfortunately, we don't have the opportunity living here in Chutz La'aretz to be involved in all of these mitzvahs, which is what was paining Moshe Rabbeinu so much. How can I not be given the opportunity to participate in all of these mitzvahs? Now, there's a very fascinating and relevant question that is discussed about our situation here. As we mentioned, we live in Chutz La'aretz, and therefore we don't have the opportunity to participate in all of these array of mitzvahs. Would there be any potential way for me to have some kind of participatory role in the mitzvahs that are going on in Eretz Yisrael? So what does that even mean? Every time we have a Shemitah, you'll see ads in all the newspapers that try to get us, the Americans, to give money to a farmer in Eretz Yisrael. Now, to give money to a farmer in Eretz Yisrael who's being Moser Nefesh, who's upholding the laws of the Torah and who is choosing not to work his field, it's amazing for us to support that farmer. But they don't stop there. They say, support the farmer. If you give him X amount of dollars, he will sell you a portion of his field, and then it's considered to be like it's yours. And if it's considered to be like it's yours, then it's as if you are observing Shemitah, because you're now a farmer. So my question is, does that actually work? Does that work? Am I able to buy a small piece of land in Israel and say that I'm partnering together with a farmer, and by him not working the field, it means I'm not working the field, and if both of us aren't working the field, it means both of us are observing the mitzvah of Shemitah? Does that actually work? Or is it just a gimmick to get us all to give money? This is a very important question that really hinges on the following Gemara. We have a concept in the Gemara of shlichus. Shlichus means that I'm able to send somebody else in my stead to do something. So what are the examples the Gemara gives? The first example the Gemara gives of shlichus is a very strange example. The Gemara says, let's say you have a man and a woman who decide they want to get married. Now, the normal course of events is that when a chassan and kala decide they want to get married, they're both going to show up to the hall on the same day, and they're going to stand on the chuppah together, and the chassan is going to be mekadesh, his wife. He's going to give her a ring and say, Harei amekudeshesli, and then they're all going to get married and they'll be happily ever after. We live in an imperfect world and it doesn't always work out that way. So the Gemara describes the following scenario. What happens if a boy and a girl decided they very much would like to get married, and the problem is the boy is unable to make it to where the girl is living now? But he's afraid if he doesn't solidify this marriage, if he doesn't do the kiddushin, somebody else is going to convince her to get married. She's a big catch, and she's very impressive. And therefore, he's concerned that if I don't figure out how to marry her as quickly as possible, it's not going to happen. Somebody else is going to marry her. By the way, you know that the Gemara tells us there are certain times when you're not allowed to get married, right? During Avelus, you're not supposed to go to weddings, and you're not supposed to have celebrations. However, as we know, you're allowed to get engaged during many of the restricted times of the year. Why, asked the Gemara? During Sfiros HaOmer, why are you allowed to get married? During the 3 weeks, why are you allowed to get engaged? The answer the Gemara says is Shema Yikadmenu Acher. You're a big catch. And I'm afraid if I don't get engaged, somebody else is going to get engaged to this person. Even though we dated and we love each other and we appreciate you, somebody else can make you feel differently than you felt. And therefore the Gemara says, we don't want to lose the opportunity for the shidduch to be solidified. And therefore we say, when you have it in the bag, go ahead and get engaged, even if it's at a time of avelus. Similarly, the Gemara says, you have a situation where a boy and a girl really want to get married. The problem is they're in two different states. So the man is allowed to send the shaliach, he's allowed to send the proxy. He gives over all of his rights and powers, and he then uses this individual as somebody who stands in his place. And that person could go to this woman and say, I want you to accept the kiddushin on behalf of this man who unfortunately is unable to be here now. That's shlichus. And we have such a concept. Says the Gemara, let's say I have to be mafresh truma, and I'm not currently at home, but I want to make sure that the truma is taken. I can send the shaliach, I can send the proxy in my stead to go and separate the truma, do what has to be done, and that's fine, that works. It's a concept that we are very familiar with. However, says the Gemara, there is something that stands in the way of shlichus. There is something that stands in the way of being able to transfer my opportunities to another person to do them on my behalf. What is it? Says the Gemara, Kol milsa de'iu lamatzi avid, shliach lamatzi mashvi. That is an Aramaic term, which I'm going to explain in a moment. Kol milsa de'iu lamatzi avid, shliach lamatzi mashvi. Let me give you an example. Let's say, as we said, I want to get engaged to a woman, but I'm not here. I live in California. The woman is in New York. So I call up my friend in California, in New York, and I say, do me a favor. Quickly go to this address, go to this person's house, tell them that you were sent on my behalf, give them the ring, and make sure you work out the kiddushin. That's fine. What happens? I mean, it's embarrassing to talk about such a case. But what happens? The Gemara talks about lots of unusual cases. What happens in the following theoretical case? It should never happen. But let's say there's a man who lives in a certain community and has his eyes on a married woman. Now, he knows there's an Isra of Lo Sinach, which means he's not allowed to do anything with that woman. But he's looking forward to the day when her husband will either divorce her or he will die, and then she'll become available, and he hopes to marry her. That's a terrible, sick man. But we have lots of sick people out there, right? So this is where his mind is. And his concern is, how am I going to make sure that the moment her husband dies, I'm going to be the first one to have the opportunity? The problem is, I live in California, she lives in New York. So what do I do? So what does he do? No, so what should he do?
Tells his friend in New York.
Tells his friend in New York, who happens to live next door to this woman, you're going to be the first to find out when the husband dies. So I want you to know, you're on call. I'm going to give you a ring now. And whenever you find out that this woman becomes available, the first thing you need to do is knock on the door, say, Hamakam Yenachem Eschem, I'm really sorry that your husband died, but I'd like you to accept the Kiddushin from my friend who lives in California. Again, crazy, wild case that never happens in a million years, but the Gemara gives such a conceptual case. Would that work, or perhaps not? Would that work or not?
Why not?
Why not? So let's talk it through. Why yes?
Because you're allowed to punish Shliach.
So I would have said, if I can make a Shliach for lots of other things in life, why shouldn't I be able to make a Shliach for this as well? Problem is,
it's conditional.
It's conditional, and therefore, so let's talk it through. Let me give you a condition that maybe wouldn't make a difference. Let's say I say to this man, I'm in California, I say to this man in New York, forget this case for a moment. There's a girl I want to get engaged to, and I say to him, I only want you to get engaged when it's pouring rain outside. Like, that's like the perfect background for the engagement. Again, he's insane. He's crazy, right? So I only want you to say Harei Mekudeshesli to this woman if it's pouring rain outside. So that's a condition that I stipulate in your ability to do what you want to do. But that's fine. So here you're saying it's a condition that's a little bit more problematic. Why?
Maybe we're not sure it's going to happen.
Oh, not just we're not sure. Right now, the way things are, it's impossible for me to do this. I wouldn't be able to be engaged to her because she's married. So I can't get married to her. Later on, maybe the circumstances will change. But right now, there's no possibility for me to do this myself. If I can't do it myself, then I can't make a shliach do it in my stead either. How can I give over my ability when I don't have the ability myself? And that's the rule that the Gemara lays out for us, that kol milsa de'iu lamatzi yavid, shliach lamatzi mashvi. The Dagoman Rava, he's one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, the Nodi Yehuda, the 1700s, writes the following case. Let's say you have the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. What is the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen? That on which day, here, we're all about to get this wrong, on which day after the child is born are we supposed to be podehim? Are we supposed to redeem the child? On day 31, of course. Right. So on day 31, we do a Pidyon HaBen. Don't feel bad, because many people have planned Pidyon HaBens on the wrong day, and people have shown up, and they have to wait. So it's supposed to be on Yom Lamed Aleph. It's after the child is already 30 days old. Then we go ahead and we do the Pidyon HaBen. Okay. A beautiful, rare, unusual mitzvah. Why is it unusual? First of all, it's only when the firstborn child is a boy. Second of all, if the mother is a bas kohen or a bas levi, So there's no kiddin abed. So it has to be a firstborn child who is not from a bas koyin or a bas levi, who is also a baby boy, who was also born naturally. But if the child was not born naturally, it was a C-section, then there would be no kiddin abed. So it's not so common that we have a kiddin abed. But okay, there is such a thing. What happens in the following case? Man has a firstborn child and he's really excited and they do the bris. And now they're scheduling a kiddin abed, and the problem is he has a business meeting scheduled way in advance. He has to travel to Dubai and he's unable to cancel it. And even though his wife just had a baby and he's going to miss the kiddin abed, but what should he do? He can't miss it. This is his biggest meeting of the year with his biggest client, and there's no way to push it off, and what's he going to do? And too bad. So what does he do? What does he do? So two options. What are the two options? Option number one is, okay, option one is push off your trip, but he can't. So now, under the circumstances, what should he do? Option one is, let's just do it in 6 months from now when he gets back. That's not a good option. Why? Because he's supposed to be poda his son at the proper time. So the kiddin abed should happen on day 31. Now he's not home. So what's the second most obvious thing to do? Make a shliach. So how much money is the kiddin abed? Let's say, I don't know how much it is offhand, let's say it's $100. So I go to a shliach on day 15 after the baby's born. I say, listen, I'm really embarrassed to tell you, but I had a business trip that was scheduled way in advance. My wife ended up being early. We didn't expect any of this. Now it turns out I'm not going to be home for the kiddin abed. So here's $100. On day 31, I want you to go in my place, and I want you to do the mitzvah of kiddin abed on my behalf. Does that work? Who said yeah? You said yeah? Why? So why not? It should work, just like shlichus works all the time. However, the Rebbe Yehuda mentions, maybe there's an objection to this. Maybe it won't work. Why wouldn't it work? Perhaps it won't work because the concern is that right now, I, myself, as the father of this child, would not be able to do the pidyon aved. It's too early. Let's say a father knows he's going on a business trip. Can he do the pidyon aved on the 20th day? No. The pidyon aved only works if it's on Yom Lamed Aleph and further. So since he himself would not be able to do the mitzvah right now, how can he give over his ability to somebody else when it's impossible for him to do it himself? The only time I can hand over my proxy, the only time I can hand over my ability to do something is if I actually have the ability to do it. But if I don't have the ability to do it right now because it's too early, it's Yom Chamisha Asar, it's 15 days since the baby is born, then how can I give over that ability to somebody else? Yes, question.
So on day 31, can he call him up and give him $100?
Yes. On day 31, he certainly would be allowed to. But here the question is, since it's before day 31, would that work or not? How does this have relevance to our case? Along comes Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz, who was one of the great Gedolim in the early 1700s. He passed away in 1764. Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz was the author of the Sefer Plesi, which is one of the very important commentaries on Shulchan Aruch Yerodeya. And he writes the following. Kama anashim anshei maisa. I know many Jews. He was the Rav in Altoona, Hamburg, Prague, right? Many of you have heard of Prague. He was the rabbi at the time of the biggest communities at that time. Kama Anshei Maisa, he says, I know many pious Jews. She'nasmi lefnei chachamim da'azu le'eretz Yisrael. They knew that there were people who were traveling to Israel. Again, not as frequently as we have today. But they knew that there were Jews who were going to travel to Israel. And they gave them money. And they wanted that those Jews who were going to go to Eretz Yisrael should take this money and should partner together with farmers in order that the Jew living in America or living in Prague should be able to have some kind of portion of the mitzvah of the farmer who's doing the work in Eretz Yisrael and doing all the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz. And he says, there's no reason why it shouldn't work. After all, we have a concept of shlichus. We have a concept of making somebody serve as my proxy, and that is a valid halachic concept. So why should this be any different? Why shouldn't this work? That's what he writes. He doesn't understand why it shouldn't work. Okay. Question then becomes, what if I have a technical roadblock in the way of the shlichus. What we spoke about before was, I can't make a shliach to marry this woman because she's now married. That's a halachic roadblock. What if I have a technical roadblock? So the Mahari Bruna, who was one of the Gedolim in the 1400s, from the Gedole Chachme Ashkenaz, the Mahari Bruna gives the following case. And he says that there used to be a custom in some communities where they would sell, you ever been to a shul where they sell the aliyos? Some shuls do it in Eretz Yisrael, they do it all the time. Here we do it like special occasions. In this particular community, in Germany, he writes, what they used to do was, at the beginning of the year, on Rosh Hashanah, they would make an announcement. Who would like to buy the aliyos for the rest of the year? We didn't want to be busy every day. We're going to be selling, buying. We don't want to be busy with this. So they would sell one day of the year for the entire year, and next Rosh Hashanah, we'll sell it again to someone else. Obviously, you have to pay a lot of money. Now, what does it mean when I buy the aliyos for the rest of the year? It means either I can take it myself or I have the right to give it to somebody else. Fine. They also used to sell Hagba and Glila. Picking up the Sefer Torah was also one of the things they sold for the whole year. So there was a guy who bought Hagba and Glila for the year. He's very excited. And then it turns out he got sick and he ended up in the hospital for 6 months of the year. After like a month in the hospital, he said, hey, I'm the guy who bought Hagba and Glila, but I'm not able to go to shul. So he wanted to be able to put somebody else as his shaliach in shul, that they should be able to stand in his place and take all the Hagba and Glilas that he paid for. And a big fight broke out. Is that something that he's allowed to do or not? After all, if you're in shul and you don't want to do it, so you give it to someone else. But if you're not able to come to shul, who said you have a right to hand it off to someone else? That was the question. And that's similar to this question here. If I want to have a part, a portion in the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz, is it good enough if I stay in chutz la'aretz and I just send some money to somebody who lives in Israel and I say, oh, have me in mind when you do all of that and I want to be a partner with you. What do you mean partner with me? You're not here. If you move to Eretz Israel and you participate in the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz, it's one thing. But is it really possible, is it feasible that I can live outside of Eretz Israel, send a couple of dollars there, and assume that that's going to be able to make me a partner, assume that that's going to be able to make me a person who is participating in the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz? That is the major question that is debated by many of the Gedolei Achronim. The Chayei Adam writes in the Sefer Chachmas Adam that he thinks this is something that should be encouraged, that we should definitely send money to enable ourselves the opportunity to have a chelek, to have a portion in the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz. And there are others that disagree. What I find very interesting at this, and we'll close maybe with this comment, what I find very interesting is a number of years ago, I think it was, how many years ago? I'm now 37. So when I was learning in Israel, I was 20. At the time, I had asked, there was a Shemitah then, does that make sense? Shemitah was last year, so let's do the math. 21 years ago, right? So, could be. So when that Shemitah came around, I had asked Rav Asher Weiss about this question. What do you think about a ben chutz la'aretz sending money to Eretz Yisrael in order to participate in the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz? He ended up writing a letter which expressed his discomfort with this whole practice. And what I find very important about this letter is, more important than the halacha is the hashkafa point that he makes here. So in terms of the halacha, he says, he doesn't really understand what this means. I can make a shliach to do something proactively for me. It's very hard to say I can make a shliach to not do something for me. So what does it mean? I'm going to make a farmer in Israel a shliach to not work the fields for me? What does that mean? I can make someone a shliach to go do something, to bring a carbon on my behalf, to be mafresh truma, to do all kinds of things. But how can I make a shliach to not do something? That sounds very strange. So he said, let me give you an example, he says. Let's say we know that there's a mitzvah of shvisas behemto on Shabbos. Your animals are not allowed to do work on Shabbos. Now, Schefter happens not to have any animals. I don't run a farm. But if I go to Pennsylvania, there are people who have farms. So maybe I should buy a portion of somebody who lives in Pennsylvania's farm, and I should ask them that every Shabbos, I want to be a partial owner of this animal in order that I should be able to observe the mitzvah of shvisas behemto. Does that make sense? Nobody ever heard of that. You never saw an ad in the newspaper that tells you, give money to a farmer who lives somewhere in order that every Shabbos you should be able to observe the mitzvah of Shvisas Be'am Tov. Why not? When I told this to my father, he said, great idea. Maybe we should. But we never heard of such a thing. Because how can you make a shliach? How can you make somebody a proxy not to do something? That doesn't really make so much sense. That's what he felt. Now you go to the next paragraph. Look here. It's on the second side of the page. Look here in three dots where it says Amnam, second paragraph. Amnam. Afim namar deyesh mitzvah, even if you want to argue that you could participate and you could be a shliach, even though you're living in Chutz La'aretz and you're just sending money to Eretz Yisrael, that would be good enough. Be'etzem hayos lo karka be'Eretz Yisrael shehu mishbas. Mikam akum kvar amr chachamim hakol lefi rov ha'maisa v'rachmana li babay. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our heart. Bizmanenu, in our days, kulam rodfim achar mitzvahs kalos. Everybody's looking for a quick fix. Everybody's looking for a quick fix. We want somebody to go daven for us for 40 days here and to visit this cemetery for 40 days over there, and we're going to do a hafreshes challah. So all week long, I'm going to talk Lashon Hara, I'm going to do all kinds of averas, I'm going to do everything there, but as long as I say nishmas every night, I'm good. It's laughable, it's humorous. It doesn't work that way. Don't misunderstand. It's always great to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in many different ways. But what's more important than the nishmas 40 days and the saying Pitim HaKtores, more important than having someone visit Kever Rachel for 40 days in a row, is that I should be a good Jew. That I should be a Jew who's thinking, a Jew who cares, a Jew who's committed. And whether I have someone going to these places and doing these kinds of strange things does not really impact my observance and my connection, my relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he says, Bizmanenu kulam rodfim achar mitzvas kalos. Everybody is looking for a quick fix. I was talking to someone recently. I was going through a very, very difficult time. And they said that somebody mentioned to them, you know, you should check your mezuzahs. I didn't have the gall to respond. Don't check your mezuzahs, check yourself. When the Gemara says that somebody who goes through a difficult time should look into things, it doesn't say he should look into his mezuzahs. It says, Yefashvesh b'maisev. Look into yourself. And see, maybe there's something, again, I can't tell you what you need to fix. I'm not living in your house. I'm not you. But everybody knows themselves. When you're going through a difficult time, checking the mezuzahs is very nice. But that's not where it starts and ends. That's one piece of introspection. Maybe my mezuzahs happen not to be kosher. But that's not where it is. The real work should be to look inside of myself and ask, let me check myself instead of checking my mezuzah. But it's much easier to check the mezuzah. So that's what we do. Oh, let's check the mezuzahs. Maybe that's the problem. That's not the problem. The problem is that there are things going wrong in your life. And God is trying to wake you up, and he wants you to realize that there's something larger here. This is a moment of clarity for you. It's supposed to be a moment of reflection, a moment of thought. And for many people, it just goes right by them. Why? Because it's much easier to have the quick fix and check the mezuzah than to do the hard work and look inside of ourselves. B'shochachim, people forget, the greatest way to come close to the Ribbono Shel Olam is ba'avodas avoda, avodas masa, ba'amida b'nisyonos hachayim. When a person is willing to withstand the difficulties, the impediments, and the challenges of life, when you're willing to overcome them, that's the way to get close. That's really what God wants of us. He doesn't want us to check the mezuzahs. It says that during Chodesh Elul, some have a minhag that they check the mezuzahs. But imagine if a person's Chodesh Elul is limited to that. Imagine if all I do during Chodesh Elul, I never go to shul, I don't go on Rosh Hashanah, I don't hear the shofar, I don't say slichos, all I do is, I sent the mezuzahs in. What does that even mean? What does sending the mezuzahs in mean? What kind of Jew are you? How seriously do you take your commitment? And I was so conflicted. On Hanukkah, I was in the vice president's house, Kamala Harris, and her husband is Jewish. And he was so proud, he was so excited about the fact that he's Jewish and he's a very Jewish Jew. He's like very excited about his Judaism, whatever that means. It was very confusing to me because here I am on Hanukkah in the vice president's house when we're celebrating Lahashkicham Torasecha and celebrating our defeat over the Yevanim and how they tried to make us all assimilate. And here I am at an assimilated marriage in their home celebrating Hanukkah. It was a little confusing, to be honest. But what made it really hit home was when he started walking me around his house to show me the mezuzahs that he had a rabbi come and put up on his house, which is, on the one hand, really amazing that the vice president of the United States has mezuzahs on the house. On the other hand, it's like, what? So that's what Judaism means to you? Now, there's two ways to look at it. You can say, oh, at least, even though he's an unaffiliated Jew, at least he has a mezuzah, which is beautiful, and I'm not negating it. On the other hand, when you look at it in the full context, it says, is this your whole connection to Judaism? I once asked my father, I was asked to be Masada Kedushin at a wedding, where I knew that there was not going to be a lot of religious observance that this couple was going to keep afterward. Both of them were not really religious. They grew up in religious homes, but they both drifted away. And I was very uncomfortable being Masada Kedushin. Like, how can I be Masada Kedushin at a wedding where I know they're not going to keep Taras HaMishpacha? They're not going to keep kosher in the home. Like, what does it even mean to be Masada Kedushin? I was very torn about it. On the other hand, you can say, at least it's a nice thing that they want to have a Jewish ceremony, they want to have a rabbi officiate, they want to get married, Kedas Moshe B'Yisrael, so is that so bad? I was very conflicted, I wasn't sure. I spoke to my father about it. At the end of the day, he told me I should go, I should participate, I should be mechazik them, and he told me, you should buy them a mezuzah as a present. Buy them a mezuzah as a present with a beautiful mezuzah case. And I said, why? He said, because I don't know how many mitzvahs they're going to end up observing in their marriage. But here's one easy mitzvah that you are going to give them the opportunity to observe without them even trying. Which Jew has an objection to putting a mezuzah on the door? It's not so hard, especially if you don't have to spend the money. Somebody else gave it to you. So you buy them the mezuzah, they're going to hang it up. And it turns out that even if they do nothing else, they observe that mitzvah every single day of their lives. That's a big schus. Look what you were able to do for them. So to me, that's very different than somebody who says, oh, you know, I'm so Jewish. You know why I'm Jewish? Well, I'm not married to a Jew. I don't go to synagogue on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I don't do anything. I don't sit in the sukkah. I don't shake lulav. But I have mezuzahs in my house. Rachmana liba bud. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants more of us. And of course, Judaism cannot just be limited to my feelings and my thoughts and my sensitivities. It has to be actions. The Torah is all about actions. It's about doing things. But beyond that, the Torah also wants that when we do those actions, we're invested in it. We're involved. We realize that it's a relationship. It's something real. So to send a $100 check to a farmer in Eretz Yisrael and say, ah, now I wrote off Shemitah, I'm good. That's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of us. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants so much more. Chaklai Eretz Yisrael Hamashbisim Esad Moseim Eshvias. Hein Hein Gibori Koach Oseh Devar. Don't think you're such a hero that you sent a $100 check to the farmer in Eretz Yisrael. The hero is the farmer in Eretz Yisrael who's actually sacrificing his own parnasa and his own life to do what God wants him to do. That's the sacrifice. That's the hero. That's the person we should be celebrating and recognizing because that's where it is. It's not where I am, but it's where he is. So again, technically, is there a kiyum ha-mitzvah? Do I get credit for participating in the Shemitah when I send the check? Maybe yes, maybe no. Arguable, big discussion in the postgame, as we said. But more important than all of that is, do I realize that it's important for me to develop a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is what every mitzvah is supposed to afford us the opportunity to do. And that is something we need to think about far more than the mere thought of the specifics of whether or not this is considered to be a kiyum mitzvah or not. Think about the general question, and that question is this considered to be something that will bring me closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu or perhaps not? And that is what we think about as we remind ourselves of the mitzvah of Kisavo El Haaretz, when we come to the land of Eretz Yisrael and we have the opportunity to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in so many different ways. We have to always remind ourselves that the greatest way to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through the mitzvah HaTorah. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael not because he thought Eretz Yisrael was a great place to vacation, not because of the pizza or the falafel or the sabros, not because of the bamba, but rather Moshe Rabbeinu understood that Eretz Yisrael is a necessary part of our lives because it is the greatest place of connection because of the mitzvos that we are obligated to observe and fulfill when we get there. And that is an opportunity that all of us have, especially during Chodesh Elul, to think about where our relationship is headed, where we want it to be, and we are Mir Tashem. We hope it will be with the coming of the new year. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.